Hello and welcome to the Not Quite Hollywood podcast, where we talk about films and film things. I'm August.
I'm John.
And I'm Jamie.
Alrighty, so kick this off. Jamie, what movie did you watch?
Well, I have a series on my blog where I watch movies I grew up watching as a kid and see if they kind of hold up or not. And I watched the 1993, air quotes, classic Last Action Hero. Directed by John McTiernan, who did Die Hard and Predator, okay. And written by a lot of people. There was a couple people who did the story, one of which is Zach Penn, and then a second draft is co-rewritten by Shane Black, and then finally there was a polish on it, I guess, for $1 million for William Goldman, one of the famous screenwriters who did Princess Bride and everything like that. So there's a lot of heritage in like the writer side of things, but a lot of studio involvement kind of messed up some of the things in the movie.
Okay. What did he polish for $1 million?
Yeah.
He polished his knob.
Must have polished a producer's knob or something.
He rewrote every... renamed every character. I don't know what that means.
That makes me curious. I'm going to research that later.
Yeah.
Like, polish. I know, like, you can be brought on as, like, an assistant this or script supervisor or something.
But you get to pay $1 million.
Yeah, $1 million to polish a script?
Well, the funny thing is, there's a lot of things, and this is a little tangent, but there are a lot of things in script writing that are bizarre. Like, if you write something with your partner, it's an ampersand, you guys work together. If you somebody rewrote it, it's an and spelt out, A-N-D. That's the difference. And then also, if you have to have another credit on there, you have to write at least 50% of the screenplay. There's some kind of weird stipulation. So if you don't change enough, it's essentially just a polish to make things tighter. I think it's like tweaking things, rewriting some dialogue, make sure it's like a better movie overall. That's why they do that kind of stuff.
They should do that more often.
They should. And they actually do a lot, but you never see credit for that. You never see like people on the list, but anyway.
So like story-wise, did you see $1 million polish on it?
Well, and that's the thing too. So the studio was pushing for this date. It was like June 13th or something like that. Of 93, and they were pushing, so they were rushing production, post-production, editing was cut, was truncated. They could have cut another 10 minutes off, but Schwarzenegger was also behind it. There were a lot of people involved, and he agreed with them to still release it. He should have waited a couple months, because it released the week after Jurassic Park.
Oh, no. Jesus.
And that was another reason why. So, as it stands now, though, the movie's pretty good.
No one's going to watch Dinosaurs. Let's put it out.
Yeah.
Yet they have like a little Brad Tarpet scene.
Like we got Schwarzenegger. Come on.
Yeah, Spielberg, he can do sharks, but he can't do dinosaurs.
Special effects are overrated. But
it's CGI? Oh, God, it's going to look horrible. Yeah,
it's a fad.
Now, when you introduced this film, you air-quoted the classic.
Because a lot of people... I've heard. I'm not sure if it's like revisionist history or not, but a lot of people said it was a shitty movie, and I always loved it since I was a kid. I rewatched it. I loved it. It's a great parody of the action genre, and they make fun of it a lot. And I think people just assumed it was another action movie with Schwarzenegger. That's why it was critically panned and didn't do well in the box office, amongst the other reasons we discussed. But I mean, it does what it's supposed to do, and it does it really well. It makes fun of the movies that it's.
Preceded it?
Proceed. Actually, yeah, I guess there's no way of saying it.
Okay, no. Those P words. Well, I went to see it because my father went to see it, and he came back and said he loved it.
Oh, good.
Because my father was a huge influence for me for, like, action movies and stuff. For some reason, I mean, he knew the ones to go see. He was a big movie-going guy back in the day. So, like, Michael Keaton, Batman, he came home and was like, you have to see this movie, you know? And, like, RoboCop, you know, and Beverly Hills Cop. And when he came home and said... Don't listen to what people are saying about Last Action Hero. He goes, it's actually really good. And he was the first one that said, that I remember him saying, it's a parody of action movies. So I went into it with that mindset. I was like, this is actually really fun. This is a fun movie.
It's really cool having your dad to vet that kind of stuff.
Yeah, my dad was like the indicator species or something. He was just like...
Well, he's like checking it, right? Probably make sure it's like the content was for a, at that time, like a 15-year-old.
Oh, he didn't care.
Okay, well, yeah. It's almost like, ostensibly it was like that, and then he's like, no, this fucking movie's awesome.
My mom cared, he didn't care.
Yeah.
I mean, that definitely sounds more interesting to me, knowing that it's like a parody of those action films.
So, I mean, that means you haven't seen it?
No, I haven't seen The Last Action Hero. I mean, I really haven't seen much of Schwarzenegger.
Mm-hmm.
Eraser?
Yeah, Eraser. I love Eraser, too. I'm
True Lies.
Yep. True Lies is another one. Mm-hmm. It's borderline parody of action, because there's so many scenes in there where it's in there just to be like,
yep.
Okay, this is stupid, it happens in action movies, yeah. But we're going to put it in.
Sixth Day. That's a good one.
Well, you had, yeah, well, that was...
You know what? I saw that in theaters, and I was at an impressionable age, and I thought it was pretty cool.
Well, yeah, and then...
Self-driving cars.
From the same time, End of Days...
Like there was a lot of days.
Collateral Damage. It was 2003 or 2.
Oh, is that when he's back in the jungle or something?
No, that was, what? I don't know what that
was. I don't remember. I just remember people telling me it was bad.
Oh, yeah, he might be in the jungle in that. Yeah, it's been a long time.
I'll have to say the most recent one I saw was The Last Stand.
How was that? Was that, like, remotely okay?
I haven't seen any Schwarzenegger movie since he left office.
Oh.
That's probably a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see Expendables. Last Stand was, I mean, it was alright. Mostly saw it for the director. I'm going to butcher his name. Something Jim Pook Wan or something like that. Okay. He did I Saw the Devil.
Oh,
he did I Saw the Devil?
Yeah.
That's why he went
this to is like his first American film that he was a part of. And see, that's the thing, is like... he does really well with the action sequences.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's pretty good directing. It's just, like, mostly the story is just, like, okay, this is passable and boring. But, I mean, I really wish he would have had a better script to work with.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the average moviegoer would be able to see this director and be like, hey, this guy's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And then go into these other movies and watch him.
But just by doing that film, people are like, what else has he done? Just out of curiosity. And they're like, I'll check it out. And then they may be surprised. Like, there's a smaller margin, of course, if it's not a film they like, but most people who like that kind of movie won't necessarily like I Saw the Devil.
No, definitely not.
But there are people that will check them out because of their name, which is cool. I mean, like, you know, no news, what's that word? Even bad press is good press or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
Kim Jae-woon,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He also did The Good and Bad and the Weird.
Oh, which is another fantastic film.
Tale of Two Sisters.
I haven't seen Tale of Two Sisters. That's a good one, too. But no, I strongly recommend The Good, the Bad, and the Weird.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a huge play on The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, but set within China. And it's about kind of like the relationships between China, the Koreans, and the Japanese during like the 1940s or somewhere around there.
Nice.
And they're looking for treasure. And it's touted as being gold. And then at the end you realize it's something different. I don't want to give it away. But when the big reveal, I was like, that makes so much sense.
Spoilers, so they're on a train.
Oh, I saw that at the clip. Beginning, yeah.
I don't know. But anyway, yeah, so Last Action Hero, what we're talking about. I'm like, wow, I want to learn more about Good, Bad, and the Weird. Last Action Hero is definitely a fun thing. Knowing that it's a parody makes it a lot easier to go into. Because if you didn't know it was a parody, which probably a lot of people didn't, they're like, oh, this is kind of cheesy and more than I'm accustomed to as a stupid moviegoer. You know what I mean? Like, that sounds really terrible.
But, calling all moviegoers stupid.
No, but as a kid, I was pretty stupid when I watched it.
Well, yeah.
But I would love the meta aspects of it. Like, this kid is in the real world in New York City, and he watches these movies, and he loves Jack Slater, the character. And that's the fourth one's about the premiere, and he knows like this movie theater owner who decides, I'll let you see it like early, the midnight showing, like advanced screening, and just him and the projectionist, and there's a ticket Harry Houdini has, and he gets transported into the movies. I love that kind of thing. That's really where the parody comes into full force, because it's like, this is the fourth movie, and like the beginning of the movie is like, my favorite second cousin Frank was tortured. Like, they're almost like, they're joking, like, they're running out of people he cares about. So it's like, okay, down the line, like, my favorite second cousin. Like,
I always felt bad for the old projectionist, because he was the one that got the ticket from Harry Houdini way, like, decades ago. And he was too afraid to use it, because he was afraid it wouldn't be real, and it would just ruin his
perception
of magic and stuff. So he gives it to that little kid, and the kid uses it right away, and it's real.
Little fucking snot-nosed brat.
Okay, I mean, this is kind of go off topic here, but what movie would you use that ticket on?
Oh my god. I mean, I would use it on so many movies. I'd be afraid because it has a mind of its own, so like you could do its own thing. But I mean, for the most part, if you're near a movie that's on screen, it's like The Ring. She can come out and fucking...
Well, that's the thing. You could go in, but the characters could also come out.
Yeah, which is freaky. So like if you're watching Nightmare on Elm Street, well, shit. Oh, yeah. Well, sorry.
I'm not going to use a ticket on that.
No, but you can go into like...
If I use it in a porno, would I get an STD?
Probably.
Only if they come out?
I don't know, though. Yeah, maybe. You're right.
Because in the movie world, they're like, they're invincible.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah.
But I don't know, because I mean...
Just don't ever leave the movie.
John's like, my porn collection has more meaning.
It depends on the characters within the movie. Mm-hmm. Within this porno, this hypothetical porno, if it's toted around that they're all dying of AIDS, you're going to get AIDS. Okay.
Well, that's true. If there's a narrative where, like, we're dying of AIDS, we might as well have sex.
Yeah. Example
to explain that is like Schwarzenegger's character in the movie, in the fake movie, is like indestructible. Like he can fly off buildings, cars get blown up, he walks away from it, you know.
Gets shot.
Then when he goes into the real world and he tries to do things that he would do in the movie world, he can't do it. Or didn't he try to like punch out a window?
Yeah, he's like, that hurt.
He's like, oh god, my hand.
You know? Why is my hand hurting?
It's like, because you're in the real world, you can't do that.
Yeah. Now, does Arnold Schwarzenegger's character in the movie meet Arnold Schwarzenegger in the real world of this movie?
Yeah, spoilers.
I figured so. I mean, I don't know if that's really spoilers. It's kind of like screenwriting 101.
There's a good like plot thread with that. Like, but now, John, you had mentioned to me actually that you love the Ripper character.
I did. For a fake movie, for a fake movie in a movie, with a fake villain that's not really a villain, was one of the best on-screen presences for a villain I've ever seen. He had like this yellow raincoat, long stringy hairs,
horrible
scars on his face, and he had a hatchet that he would use, and that scene where he throws it, and just Schwarzenegger barely dodges it. I was like, this character should be put in an actual action movie as a villain.
Yeah.
What was the actor's name? I can't remember. Tom Noonan. It was awesome.
The only reason I knew that as a kid, I was like, I'm getting this whole IMDb database in my head. Because they say it. You see him in real life in the movie premiere, too.
Ah.
So, like, it's really cool. Like, you do learn a lot. And
I loved how he delivered his lines, too.
Oh, yeah.
That just
licks his chops.
And yeah, just like, I think I might kill somebody.
Kill someone. Oh, that's hilarious.
Everyone's, like, laughing. I'm like, that's fucking awesome.
Yeah, I don't know if Shane Black, when he wrote it, like he rewrote it, if he brought in the whole kid element, because the kid must have already been in the film, you know what I mean? But I think the dialogue might have been punched up to Shane Black's standard because of his involvement.
I could see that, just because...
But he's not annoying.
Shane Black uses a lot of kids in his movies.
There's some parts where he's annoying.
Of course. I mean, almost every kid, eventually, you just want to punch him in the face.
Well, yeah, okay.
I go to parks just to get mad.
If it starts out with this kid, you know, bringing out this Arnold Schwarzenegger character, does that mean the kid's around throughout the whole entire movie?
The kid's the main character.
He is the main character.
Yeah. Well, but it's not as bad as you think.
I don't know. I just... as a kid, seeing, you know, a kid as main character, it's alright, but... I mean, it works, but now that I'm an adult, I can't deal with it. I just can't follow fucking children.
You bring up a really good point. I only had first seen this movie as a kid. Had I only seen it now, maybe I'd have a different perspective. Because, like, other movies that have kids, sometimes now they piss me off.
Yeah.
But if I was a kid, I'd be like, oh, that could have been me. Like, that's almost like a screen proxy for you a kid. I don't know, man. I wish I could... I want to see your opinion now. I want you to watch it so I can see what you... Like, I'll live vicariously through you.
If it makes you feel better, I don't think that kid went on to do anything else.
Nope.
It's one of those. Just.
It seems pretty prevalent on these action movie kids. Look at the kid from Terminator 2.
Oh, yeah. He had a lot of other problems.
Drugs. He was in that Crow movie. The shitty crow movie.
City of Angels?
No, it was like part four.
Oh, part four? Ew.
You know you're in the dumps when you're doing a direct video crow movie.
When the main character had died in the previous movie, yeah.
The only thing, other thing I know that kid from is My Girl 2.
Yeah.
And I barely remember those movies. I only saw him on the IMDb. I'm like, oh, yeah.
My Girl 2.
You ever see My Girl?
That was an excellent movie.
It's a really good movie.
Never seen My Girl.
Is Jeff Daniels the father in that one?
No, it was Dan Aykroyd.
It's about a girl kind of growing up. It's I can't really explain the plot of the movie, but Macaulay Culkin's in there, and he's actually one of his better roles.
Oh.
And it's actually a really good, like, heartbreaking movie.
It's like a coming-of-age tale. This girl gets... Doesn't she get moved to a new town or something? Yes. She doesn't have any friends, and the mother's gone or something.
Okay.
It's pretty good.
My next question for you, Jamie, would be, would you recommend anyone to go see this? I mean, just anyone. Or just be like, hey, if you're looking kind of for this 90s self-aware action film, watch this one.
I mean, it depends. If you like action movies in general, right?
Yeah.
Or if you can at least appreciate them, then watch this. Otherwise, if you don't really care for action movies, it's not gonna really do anything for you because you don't know the jokes it's making, unless you're kind of like the other way around, like you kind of hate them and you like them making fun of them.
Yeah.
Then maybe, you know, it's like that kind of thing. It depends on how you fall in terms of action movies. I don't know. Besides that.
I didn't cut you off, but it did address what would be called an internet meme now. But the internet wasn't around back then. Was the whole debate that people used to have between who's better, Sylvester Stallone or Arnold Schwarzenegger, right?
Mm-hmm.
I remember talking with friends like at school and being like, I wonder which one's better. Have they ever met? Would they ever do a movie together? And there's a scene in Last Action Hero where they're in the movie world and they go to like a movie rental place. And there's a stand-up display for Terminator 2. And it's starring Sylvester Stallone.
Oh, shit.
And he's like, the little kid's like, it can't be Sylvester Stallone. It was Arnold Schwarzenegger. He was the best, you know? And he's like, what do you mean? This is like his best movie.
So they played
this cool little back and forth thing with it.
I like that.
I was just like, I remember like, oh my God, did they listen to us on the playground arguing?
Yeah.
But not only that, but a lot of the movie, you know, while he's in the film, the kid, he's trying to explain to Jack Slater that he's a fictional character, and this you're played by Arnold Schwarzenegger. And the whole time, every time Jack Slater tries to pronounce Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's like Arnold Braunschweiger.
Yeah.
Like he can't even say it. It's really funny. It's good times.
It's a very self-aware, mm-hmm. you know, referential.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's not necessarily a movie that everyone should see. I guess it has great relation to another Shane Black movie that practically nobody is going to see.
Sadly.
Very sadly.
Oh, is that my movie?
Yes.
Yes. That's the segue into your movie.
That's the segue.
Don't drive it off a cliff.
I was trying to... I'm glad you jumped in there because I was thinking of a segue. A segue for segue. I went and saw The Nice Guys.
And I went and saw The Nice Guys.
And I went and saw
The Nice Guys. Oh my God, we all saw The Nice Guys.
Although it's not the Community movie this week, but we all did go see it. And I personally loved it. I know, which this is weird because I'm upset that people aren't going to see it.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
It's considered a bomb. I love everything 70s. I love everything action. I love fun buddy cop, you know, kind of movies.
Yeah.
And Shane Black pretty much reinvigorated the whole genre, brought it all back with this movie. And critics, though, I do disagree with, too. I disagree with people not wanting to go see it, but I also disagree with everyone saying, giving it, like, A-plus ratings. Like, it's got high critical appraisal. I think it's a solid B, because there are a lot of parts that tend to either drag or the humor's being forced.
Yeah.
But when it is spot on, it's the best I've seen in a long time. The humor is... I rarely laugh out loud in a theater.
Mm-hmm.
I'll remember it and say, oh, that was humorous. I was laughing my ass off at certain scenes where I just wanted to like hit rewind and watch it again.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not going to give any away or spoil it, but when they nail it, they nail it.
Yep.
And I think this movie does deserve a lot more success than it's probably going to get. Maybe the DVD release market, maybe it'll create a cult following.
Maybe, yeah.
Because it kind of reminds me of, like, what happened when Lebowski came out. The Big Lebowski, like...
Yeah.
It kind of bombed, nobody went to see it, but then after, you know...
Well, I mean, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I feel like, is another one that I think it was released in theaters, and it was just kind of like, oh, yeah, whatever, and then got released onto DVD,
and then it just blew up.
Had a revival.
Yeah. Russell Crowe is amazing. I hadn't watched much of what he's done in the last 10, 20. The last thing I really, really liked him in was Cinderella Man.
Yeah.
I really enjoy his performance there.
I'd have to agree on that.
Yeah. But it's funny because you see these actors and sometimes they get out of shape. You know what I mean?
Oh,
They're not getting a lot of work or they're not. So seeing Russell, a fat Russell Crowe cast, he was perfect. He was perfect for the 70s like guy who gets paid to just rough people up.
Yeah.
And he was perfect. And Ryan Gosling is kind of like an amateur private investigator who's just...
He's my favorite.
He's drunk like half the time. He doesn't really know what he's doing. But
I really just wish they would have gone like the full... I don't know, went to the extreme with his alcoholism and just being like just drunk all the time. Like whenever he's in the driver's seat, he's like kind of swerving the car a little bit.
Well, I love it because it's the 70s, so he gets to the car and he's kind of drunk and his daughter, who's like 13, is sitting there.
Yeah.
And he just has her drive him around.
Yeah.
In the car.
So this movie, I think the reason why it's getting such crazy critical praise is because, and I mentioned this the other day to another friend, that the movie is such, subverts the typical summer fare. I mean, it actually has some kind of variety. It gives a different kind of perspective in the midst of all these superhero movies and shitty comedies and animated films. And that's why I think people are really latching on to it, critically. And I think, I was just looking at Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, I think to your other point, that only made $15 million worldwide. Just broke even on its budget. But this one has long legs, or has the potential for long legs. And then definitely in the home video market, I think it'll be better. Because it just seems to me like a movie that... I as much as I hate dumb sequels, I wouldn't mind seeing at least one sequel.
I would love to see a sequel to these two characters. I mean,
especially when, you know, Russell Crowe's character, when he gets to the end and you see him take a turn, it's just like, okay, this could be really fun.
Yeah. Well, we spoke about in a previous podcast of characters that don't have arcs.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it's kind of like Gosling's character doesn't seem to have any arcs.
Zero arc at all. Zero
and not
arc,
only
and
that,
I love that.
Russell Crowe's
gets worse.
Yeah. I mean, the ending's pretty funny. Like, one of the last lines. I guess I'll spoil it. Skip ahead 30 seconds if you don't want to hear it, but he's like, well, at least you're drinking again.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's a positive. It's like,
yep. You're drinking again. Yep. And it's just like a fucking bottle of tequila or vodka or something. It's just like a full bottle right there at the bar. It's just like, damn. And this movie's like relation to other action blockbusters and superhero films. It's just like, it wasn't about the destruction of the world.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about, like, guns or, like, a fucking arms race or whatever. Yeah. It was very small and self-contained.
Yeah.
And,
I enjoy those movies much more just because it's... You're dealing with, like, realistic characters, which you would think of as people. There's not just a giant entity that's the government or a giant entity that's...
Aliens.
You know, like, aliens or whatever. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or the world's going to blow up. You know, it's you're dealing with... It's what I brought up... couple podcasts ago when I talked about like Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy. I liked it because it was about the people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, there's a mystery in it, just like Nice Guys, there's a mystery going on, but what's interesting is these characters and how they interact with each other.
Yeah, I mean, I liked how you didn't really find out the whole entire mystery until it got to the third act. Mm-hmm. It was like, oh, okay, so that's where we've been leading up to. I mean, definitely, you arrive at, you know, the center of this mystery along with the characters. It's not something like where you know and then you're just like waiting for the characters to catch
up. To figure out, yeah.
The negatives, though, I'd have to say is just like sentimentality.
Yeah, there was
that just like it pops up and I'm just like, I just want a fun 70s action film, like buddy detective. Like, let's get this over.
You brought up a specific point the other day and I'll bring it up and I guess maybe it's considered a spoiler. But, like, when Russell Crowe actually kills a man,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't like that because I felt like Russell Crowe's character, even though he'd rough people up and beat them up, wouldn't murder anybody. But it seemed like they did that scene purposely to have the little girl come in and be sentimental and try to change his character or try to, you know, that this felt really forced. Yeah, this isn't you. You know?
I know you would never do that.
It's weird because that scene with the girl bugged me. Because I wanted to have that 70s fun movie, and there was a lot of, like, who gives a shit at that point? And it's funny, because, yeah, honestly, the person who has the most arc, I mean, guess besides the girl, is Russell Crowe. And then even that, really, it's not, like, from beginning to end. It's kind of like the middle, like, between the first act break and the second into third. And it's, like, really, like, I don't know, like...
Well, it's disjointed because
it is.
Yeah. At the beginning, you think, "Oh, he seems like a really tough ass killer."
Yeah,
and then you see him kind of like, "Well, no, he's kind of just this bumbling guy who might talk tough, but he wouldn't kill anybody." And then you see him kill somebody, and then you're like, "Well, what? I was getting thrown off by
because like when that I scene wasn't when, thrown off. I figured that he had killed people before. Just because like this is a man who beats people up for money. He'd be like." Probably if someone told them, hey, you know, I'll pay you a little extra if you kind of, you know, take
them out. Yeah, but then there's scenes where he doesn't follow that pattern, where there might be scenes where he could have shot and killed people and he ran away. You know what I mean? Instead, or when they're in the elevator and they just go down.
Oh.
You know, I mean, there's scenes where...
I felt like they were just scared shitless.
Scared shitless, you know. But he didn't... Because I didn't know. I thought they were going to portray him right away as, I'm going to go in guns blazing and just kill everyone. But he doesn't. You know, for a lot of it, he's more... subdued.
I think I rooted for him killing that guy because the dude fucked up his fish for no reason at all.
Oh,
like, yeah, come on. Like, it was going to force him to eat fucked. It.
He was not going to do anything after what happened to him. But
so, I mean, that could be seen as mercy killing. Cause, I mean,
I think, again, I go back to, I just think they wrote it in for the little girl to have something to...
Yeah.
So... Yeah. Shane Black, if you happen to listen to this podcast...
We love you.
And the nice guys, too. Don't have any sentimentality. Don't have a kid in it. Let's just have...
Or you can have the kid, but just no overly sentimental nonsense. Like, when she was funny, she was funny.
Oh, yeah, she was. She was
really funny.
When she came in and said, like, rim job, and she meant rim shot.
Yeah. I mean, like, her, like, sneaking into the trunk, which that scene's fucking
hilarious.
Oh, so good.
Knocking on the trunk, Ryan Gosling's character goes back, opens it up, sees his daughter, and he just shuts it and walks away.
She's fine in the trunk.
Well, because she's like, you mean, this means I'm going to have to hang out with you, right? Hello? Sir, I can't take that car. You know, it's funny, and the kid, it's getting better, at least, because... To that point I made earlier with Last Action Hero, for the most part, I enjoyed the kid.
Yeah.
And honestly, with Iron Man 3, the same with the Shane Black, I enjoyed the kid for the most part. There were some times where I'm like, Jesus Christ, shut up or stop doing this. Like when the girl went to that guy, Blueface, pissed me off. I'm like, just let him die.
Yeah. This guy almost kidnapped you.
Yeah.
And who knows what the fuck he was going to do to you.
Ugh,
like,
gross.
Yeah. Exactly. Just like, obviously he's a bad guy, and
I appreciate trying to give her some character, but I mean, like, this movie didn't feel like it needed that kind of character.
No, it didn't.
No.
I hope it does well enough to make a sequel, honestly, because it is definitely fun. I have a vibe. It does have, the chemistry, Gosling and Crowe is so good. It's like the early Lethal Weapon, like, you know, with the Riggs and Murtaugh. It's a really fun time. You want to see more of them. I mean, obviously you don't want them to overstay their welcome, but...
I want to see more of
them. Yeah.
And...
Let's kickstart a sequel.
Alright, let's go.
Sequel. Yeah. Oh, Jesus Christ, that's going to take a lot of money.
Let's get people to see the first one first and make it easier on ourselves.
We'll probably be able to, like, afford an appearance of Russell Crowe's hand and that's it.
Ooh, yeah.
So don't go see Angry Birds.
Yeah.
Go see The Nice Guys.
Or Neighbors 2, don't go see
Go see Neighbors 2 either.
I have laughed harder at Nice Guys than any other film this year, including Deadpool.
There you go.
I laughed harder at Nice Guys than anything else.
Well, that's because I feel like there's actual comedy within Nice Guys. Like, there's jokes and there's setups to those jokes. It's not just being like, how stupid of a thing can I come up with?
Well, more importantly, it's jokes based out of characters' interactions.
Yeah, and it's based out of, like, reality, too. Like, like, when they go up, these are obviously two guys who have no patience for, like, the protesters.
Yeah.
Okay? And it's in the 70s, so you gotta think not everyone is, like, super conscientious or progressive or anything.
Oh, yeah.
So when they're trying to get answers from this protest group and they're all laying there pretending they're dead because of the smog or whatever.
Yeah.
And they're just so frustrated because these people will not answer because they're just like, we're all dead, we can't talk to you. And just seeing that, you know, is...
Yeah, and their interaction with other characters.
It's so natural.
You know. The fucking kid in the bike. Oh my god. That entire scene.
I think that's where a lot of this movie really pulls from, in between kind of like those funny action sequences, is their interaction with all these other characters within this world.
Yeah.
And that's what really works within those in between those scenes.
And those are my favorite movies, like character-driven movies where the plot and everything is, you know, pushed along by interacting with wacky characters or funny interactions, and just sets them on these paths, you know, or accidental discoveries, and it just brings them. You
know. A lot of accidental discoveries in Nice Guys.
Well, it was almost to the point where I was just, it almost bothered me, like when they're trying to find that girl and she lands on the hood of their car. But I was like, I can forgive this because this is how this movie is.
What did you guys think about the scene at the dried up pool when he's telling the story of the diner? There was like a moment there they were trying to get, and obviously they played it off for laughs with Ryan Gosling falling asleep, but they're like, he's like, I just wanted to feel needed or something like that.
That's what I felt with this character. I mean, I know it's more a little more of that sentimental stuff, but I think that character is, it's called the Nice Guys. I don't think he's a bad guy.
No.
Like, he wouldn't have had that reaction to his fish.
Yeah.
I mean, he's just he's a good guy who just probably had a string of bad luck and ended up, this is what he does for a living, you know?
Yeah,
that's why I didn't see him as a murderer. You know, but
I'm like, kind of like thinking more about this story or whatever, is that Russell Crowe seems more apt to be a private investigator than Ryan Gosling. But since Ryan Gosling was previously a detective on the police force, you know, he has a notoriety, so he's able to have that business, while Russell Crowe's character is just known as a fucking thug beating people up for money.
But that's the best thing about Ryan Gosling's character. He's really good at what he does. He just gets so fucked up every day that he seems like he doesn't. Like, you know that scene?
I would actually say he isn't good at his job.
Well, that scene with
Well, it's a scene where you think he's really good because Russell Crowe's about to set off on his own, and then Gosling drops this little bit of knowledge that you think, oh my god, he's a genius.
Yeah, he's like, that's actually pretty smart.
And then it wasn't.
I get that. Like, that was a kind of like a fake. But his way of thinking, like, if he can even sober up slightly, like, that sequel could have them two working together so well.
Well, you get the feeling that
working well.
Ryan Gosling's character was good at his job.
Yep.
He had a wife. He had a house. He had a career.
Oh yeah.
There was the fire at the house. The wife died. You know, all that stuff. I mean, just broke him completely. Drove him to alcoholism. You know, so. But the thing is, you don't want him cleaned up and sober and being good.
I'm saying, you know, there is a hint of good detective work in him because you can tell his performance and then the script.
Yeah.
You can tell he was once good because that was a pretty good like clue. It was wrong, but it was a pretty good like deduction.
Yeah.
And then like theoretically, if he sobered up, they'd be like unstoppable. But
I love the scene because he like scams people at this point.
Oh yes.
People hire him, like that senile lady who wanted him to find her husband Frank, and he looks over and he sees an urn with the name Frank on it. His look on his face is just like, solved, but I'm gonna take your money anyway.
Exactly.
So yes, I saw Nice Guys and I recommend it.
Yeah, I would recommend it. Please go see it.
And speaking of action movies, we're gonna move on to
it's time to get boiled really hard, boys.
Very
boiled.
That sounds disgusting.
So, for our communal movie that we watched for this podcast, it was John Woo's 1992 action film.
Classic. You can actually say classic without quotes.
Well, yes. You just
did
I just did the quote.
I shouldn't have because it just happened.
This is straight up classic, guys. Straight up classic. Action film. Hard boiled. And honestly, I feel like I robbed John Woo, Chow Yun-Fat, and this movie because I got this movie at Bull Moose for like $5. And you know what? I spent $7 on Captain America Civil War. And I had more fun and a better time with this movie than that movie.
Okay, so when you watched it the night with John, that was the first time you had seen it?
No, that was the second time. Well,
first full time?
That was the first full time. I had tried to watch it before, and I fell asleep. Not to say anything about this movie. I was just very tired. It was cold but warm in my room, and I just felt really comfy, and I fell asleep.
I almost fell asleep this morning because I didn't have much sleep last night. That's why. But yeah, I know what you mean.
But so yes, this is my first time like watching it end to end. It's a long movie.
Yeah, it's actually a little under 2 hours, or a little over 2 hours.
I think it's a little over 2 hours.
But 2 hours, 8 minutes.
Two hours and eight minutes.
But man, I mean...
For an action film, I mean, it's kind of long.
So you must feel the same way. When I finished it this morning, I'm like, holy shit. I didn't realize this movie was that fucking good.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it's... Oh.
It's surprising.
You know, like... you know what's funny? I'll tell you a little tidbit. When I put it in the DVD player, or PS3 today, I'm like, I press play. It said hard boil. All right. So I'm looking at it, I'm like, well, this is weird. It's all action scenes. What the fuck? And it's just action scenes over a song. And like the intro credit came out. I'm like, oh. And like, because your PS3 remembers where you were, you guys had got to the trailers. I was watching the trailer. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? So I backtracked and like, okay, here's the movie. Because I saw like all the big action scenes in the trailer. It said hard boiled. And then again, hard boiled. I'm like, what the fuck is going on?
And I was mistaken, because I thought I had seen Hard Boiled before, but it was The Killer that I had seen with Chow Yun-Fat and John Woo.
Oh. Okay.
Which is actually 2 hours and 21 minutes.
Whew. That was the other trailer on the trailer.
And has a 100% Rotten Tomatoes.
Damn.
Score.
Wow.
Wow.
And
talk about Rotten Tomatoes later, but...
Hard Boiled has 94%. Which is... Those are both awesome scores for over 2 hour long action film.
From Hong Kong.
From Hong Kong.
From Hong Kong.
Yeah.
What year did The Killer come out?
1990.
Oh shit, okay.
Yes, 2 years later.
Because Hard Boiled had that feel. Like John Woo had been a fucking pro at that point. Because you had seen like Face Off, the shit he did after an American films like Mission Impossible 2.
See, actually this was his last film in Hong Kong.
We looked it up
before he went to Hollywood.
We looked it up last night. He's been making movies since the '70s.
Oh, well that's why he was a pro at 92 when he came out. Yeah.
20 years of doing. But apparently, like, before, he had done a lot of gangster action films that focused on gangsters. And then, like, with this one, he's like, I want to do what Clint Eastwood did with Dirty Harry and make one that glorifies police work.
Mm-hmm.
And does it glorify police work? Not really. Not real police work. Oh, my God.
Did he have anything to do with Infernal Affairs? I know that Tony Young did.
No. I don't. That,
okay.
Infernal Affairs was like, oh. mid-90s.
Is that Korean?
That is Korean.
And I think it is Korean as well. So.
Yeah.
Nah.
I wasn't sure, because I was looking up Tony Young again. I'm like, I know the name. He's been at it for a while. But...
So, Chow Yun-Fat plays Inspector Tequila.
Tequila.
And he has the greatest introduction for an action protagonist ever. Starts out with him pouring... Like, the bartender pouring him... Like a, was it tequila and seltzer water or something like that?
Yeah. And he slams.
And he puts a napkin over the top of it and slams that shit, downs it, and then goes up and plays jazz music on a, what was it? Not, it's not a flute. An elbow.
Oboe is the name you're looking for. I don't know if that was it though.
Clarinet.
Maybe. Yeah. I think so.
Anyways, he plays jazz music. And it's just like, about 2 minutes long of him playing jazz while the credits are rolling. It's just being like, man, this guy's a bit of a badass.
Well, it gives that noir
feeling
big time, which I love. I love when it's the noir kind of feeling with the music, the jazz, and like the gritty streets in the city and shit like that. They nailed it.
It's really kind of an idea for like a genre that I think something hasn't been really well explored is Bangkok noir.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That would be pretty badass. Yeah. Like use a lot of those fluorescent,
lights. It's gotta be back from like the '70s, eighties, and nineties. Oh, has to look like that. You can't make them nowadays based in modern cities. Just don't look like that anymore.
Yeah,
unless Detroit. Unless you're looking at Detroit.
Oh,
No, that's for Apocalyptic Wasteland.
That's what the next Mad Max Detroit's is used for.
I think it's hilarious, just a side note, Elysium, how they're like, this is LA in the future, we just use Detroit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's awesome. It's shit. So, yeah, and then the first action scene would be when he's in the tea shop.
With all those birds.
Yeah.
John Woo loves birds.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know that.
He loves birds in, like, every film almost.
There was a lot of birds.
And a lot of crane, like paper cranes and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, Alan's introduction. Yeah, we'll be a little bit later. But, yeah, that first shootout in that little tea shop was just fucking crazy. Just seeing how many innocent bystanders that get gunned down during the whole entire interaction is to be like, it's not really something you saw in a lot of American action films. Like, I can't really pin any where we see a lot of that. I mean, these comic book superheroes, we see buildings fall down, but it's like implied.
Well, we don't. Deaths. Well, you see in the 80s action movies, you see a lot of innocent bystanders getting shot. You don't see it nowadays. They rarely do that.
Yeah,
they wouldn't do like the shootout again in the hospital, the final shootout. Oh, yeah. I'm just like, they would never have, you know.
No.
Innocent patients just trying to get out of the building, getting gunned down.
Yeah, purposely gunning him down. Yeah. Like, take him down. Like, mm-hmm. He was telling him, like, so this film was made in 92. For some reason, it feels more real in terms of the action
than
I've ever seen. Like, it's not, I guess it's partly because of the direction, partly because of the editing. But, I mean, like, the extras are, like, devoted to the film craft. Because they're not shitty. Like, some extras, like, they have, like, squibs that blow up and they get shot. Like, especially in that tea scene. There's one shot where the guy gets shot in the back and it's, like, blows up. And they act like they're really getting shot. Like, this movie's, like, professional.
It's no Samurai Cop.
No, definitely not.
Where people just fall over.
Oh, Jesus. I haven't seen Samurai Cop, but no, they don't just fall over.
But, man, this movie just really blew me away in how good it was. Like, it's perfect. It's near perfect.
And what I was thinking while I was watching it, I was just like, imagine just the choreography that had to be done to get each one of these scenes. Because I'm watching how fast the scenes are cutting. I'm like, imagine how long it took just to do a second of film.
Yeah.
Here, and then a second there, and a few seconds, and then to put that all together.
Mm-hmm. I mean, well, it's like while watching that tea shop and seeing like all that action occur and like seeing the camera, that tea shop is freaking compact.
Yeah.
And there is just a lot of tables, a lot of people within this very confined area. And it's like, how do they get the equipment and the camera through there? But able to,
like, able to do that. Make or it someone beautiful. Fucks up the shot and then it's like, ooh, set it all back up.
Yeah. One thing I really love about this movie is that every single bullet is an explosive bolt.
That shotgun he had that would just blow doors off cars.
If he gets a shotgun and it's like anything he points at, it could be just like a cardboard wall, it will explode in a fireball.
See, and of course the shootout in the factory that produces sparks.
Just all over the place.
To quote Patton Oswalt.
No reloading. Unless it's
only if it's
sometimes
for dramatic purposes.
Yeah, dramatic purposes.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's, like, one of the criticisms this movie had received when it came here to America is that some people, they're like, this is way too Hollywood. And I'm just like, I see the Hollywood in it because John Woo was very much influenced by, American Hollywood action films. You see a lot of, like, you know, Terminator 2.
Like Mad Dog felt like he was trying to make him a Terminator kind of character.
Yeah. But it just feels like it's so over the top that it's wonderful and amazing. Like, it just goes full bar, full pedal.
Well, he elevated it because going back to like Terminator, it reminded me a lot of the scenes reminded me of like the shootout scene in the police station in Terminator. Mm-hmm. That's where I saw, like, why Mad Dog looked like just the Terminator walking around just shooting around. But elevating it with, like, choreographed moves, jumping from room to room, jumping through windows and all his, kicking over tables and rolling around. It just took it and just, like, injected steroids into it or something. Yeah.
Hollywood wishes it could be like this.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
There's no fucking comparison. Balls.
Yeah. Like,
oh,
man. Like, Michael Bay was like, I'm gonna make Bad Boys 1 and 2. Like John Woo.
Speaking of the tea shop shootout, what do you think of the part where Tequila, he jumps on the table, gets covered in with powder, and he's got that bad guy on the ground. He has the gun just pointed at his head. And the bad guy says something, or like, you're not going to kill me or whatever. And he just shoots him.
Yeah.
Just straight up. It's just like...
Well, it was revenge for his partner, right? His partner? Was that who it was?
Yeah.
So...
Well, I mean, the partner got him so fucking killed, yeah, really.
Point is, that's why he did it. And then the fucking chief comes in, like, pissed off. Like, thanks a lot, he's my only witness or whatever it was.
But it's just like... That brutal kill occurs in the beginning. Like, mm-hmm. This is our first interaction, really, with this protagonist. And just seeing a gritty protagonist like that. You don't really see that much anymore, I feel, in these action films.
No, because if you would, you'd see them being overly judgmental of themselves. They'd be... There'd be a scene where they were all sad. Like, I'm questioning what I do for a lip belt. No, he's just like, fuck it. Yeah, I killed a cop.
Yeah.
Or I killed an undercover guy in...
Yeah.
Sorry.
Didn't know he was an undercover guy.
It's the business.
Guy.
Yeah. You know?
And that's the thing. It sets you up for expectations, like, really well. Like, you know what you're getting into after that first action scene. Like, okay, I'm good to go.
Yep.
If you don't want to watch it, stop it now.
No, I mean, the action really carries this movie. Because, I mean, the story is just kind of... there.
Mm-hmm.
So what about, like, in between the action sequences? I mean, what was your guys' opinions on that?
I don't think dialogue and story are his strong suits.
No.
Like, that one scene where Tequila just shows up and grabs that one guy and throws him on the car. He's surrounded by all the...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he gets hit in the face.
Yeah.
And I'm just like...
Okay.
This doesn't make any sense.
Directly after that, he goes fishing. And he catches a fish. He picks the fish off the line, blows in its mouth, and throws it out into the sea as far as he can.
That's not how you catch and release tequila. You gently put them back in the water.
Yeah.
You just throws it. You kill that fish. Add the fish to your long list of death.
So John Woo must hate fish.
Must hate fish. Loves birds.
Loves birds.
Loves birds.
Yeah. There are a lot of times where I'm like, speaking to your point about, you know, storytelling, like, he's going to blow this fucking guy's cover. Like, he's on his boat.
Yeah.
And, like, just hanging out, and all of a sudden he gets Tony gets shot, and then it's like, okay, what's going on?
Alan. His name's Alan.
No, his name's Tony. Or, sorry, no, Tony is the other guy. No, Tony is Tony. Yep.
Tony is Tony.
And the credits,
but
I swear
Alan
to God.
But Alan is Alan.
I swear to God, Tony's
his name
Tony.
Is Alan.
It's a Tony in the credits.
It's Alan. I think Tony was his first partner.
No, Tony Young. That's why I was like, oh, he has his real name. I'm like, that's cool.
Nah. Well, maybe they refer to him as
maybe
Alan.
Maybe his name's Tony Allen?
John's going to mediate here. He's going to be like...
Yeah, keep talking about
it. But anyway, that scene was like, okay, this is where he loses his cover. Like, oh, nope. Everything's fine. He just kills a couple people and good to go.
Well, see, that's another thing that kind of, like, occurred earlier, is with the whole, the song, the flowers, with, like, the...
White roses.
Little songs in the cards or whatever, and then she starts writing numbers down, and I was just like, what the fuck is going on? And then later on, a scene where that same thing happens again, it's like, oh, that's how they're transmitting, like, these little messages from the undercover agent to this police department. It's like, some things are just not explained to you right away.
Yeah.
And then it's like, later on, you're like, oh, referring to what you're talking about with the him getting his cover blown. Like, when John and I watched it, we thought that that was part of the big bad's
gang.
Thought,
Johnny's gang, right?
Yeah, Johnny. Like, we thought he was part of Johnny's gang, and he was coming after Alan.
I can't find his name.
That's bizarre.
And then we found out that he wasn't.
That's fucked up, man.
What's fucked up?
I swear, on the end credits, I'm like, his name is Tony. It said it.
Yeah, it's Alan.
I know.
I told you it's Alan.
It's just bizarre, because it said in the credits. I swear. It's
well, just to let you know, listeners, I just won against Jamie.
Fuck you.
I was right.
Well, let's get back to this boat scene.
Yep.
boats. Where man gets a shotgun shot in his back.
I love how Chow Yun-Fat comes in to say hello by diving through the little doorway into the... Was it the hull, I guess, as part of the ship?
Yeah, go into the cabin, just...
And then and after they have a little...
A little spat,
he just sits down and talks. So I decided anytime I go into someone's apartment, that's how I'm entering. I'm just kicking the door open, jumping in.
And tackling them.
Tackling somebody and then being like, we'll go out for a beer.
Sticking a gun in their face and being like...
Let's talk about the most important part. Babies.
I was jokingly going to say that, but...
Unless you want to bring up...
I wanted to bring something else.
Bring up
okay.
The point up.
The best kill I have ever seen in an action film happened during the warehouse raid. And it's when the motorcycle guys ramps off a car while there's these two workers that are just like moving boxes inside this truck trailer. And this motorcyclist ramps off this car and goes straight into the trailer and just plows one of the guys down into the boxes. And I was just like, I love that. It's just great.
I love the one that set himself up perfectly to get shot. He's on his motorcycle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And he just hits a ramp, jumps in midair so that Tequila can shoot him.
His fellow motorcyclist, he's doing a wheelie going towards Chow Yun-Fat. And
here's my gas tank.
And he shoots the gas tank and he blows up. And his friend's like, oh, you know what? Maybe I should try something a little like that.
You didn't
vary it.
And
he ramps.
Yeah, he didn't get enough height on that. I'm going to jump.
But, I mean, we saw a motorcycle with a guy on it burst into flames in midair.
Yeah.
After Chow Yun-Fat shoots it with a shotgun. Like, that's fucking awesome. If you want to see some of the best action, just freaking hard-boil. Because at the hospital, I feel like the previous action sequences, it was like ramping up. Like the tea party was like, you know, we got some like interesting, you know, visuals out of it. Then the warehouse, we saw some, you know, other cooler sequences, like the motorcycles blowing up. And then we get to the last action sequence at the hospital. And it's like, oh, Jesus, maybe like half an hour?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It goes on for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And lots of really good choreographed, like, hallway extended shots, you know, of just them shooting their way down a hallway.
Oh, yeah.
It reminded me of the hammer scene in Old Boy.
Mm.
Oh,
hallway.
God.
Like, just how long can we do, like, one take of this choreographed action? Yeah.
There's one thing I really noticed there at the end in the hospital is that they do, like, a lot of practical effects. Like, every single thing is practical effects. There's no CGI.
Yeah.
It's all squibs and, you know, like little explosives. And just seeing like the debris from explosions that happened like farther down the hallway and seeing it just all scatter forward towards the camera, it just looks so awesome. And it's sad because it's like something that looks practical and real we have to cherish. And it's like, this should be the standard because it's just really gets you into the movie and into the action.
Like, we can't do that now. Someone might lose an eye.
Oh,
CG it.
It's funny. I had written a script like trying to figure out how to visually get this like metal hallway. How would I make that work? And then the fucking basement of that hospital.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Was so cool. I was like, that's what I wanted to have in my movie. I'm like, I didn't know it could be realized that way. It was such a cool, like, especially when they find it through the morgue's different like doors and they open that door. And then the entire thing is like a little tunnel to, man, that was cool.
I want to talk about that tunnel because there's a very interesting scene that occurs within that tunnel when they get locked outside the armory or whatever.
And they shoot the bullet.
Yeah. Yeah. That is one of the stupidest scenes I've
It would
have
been cool
seen.
If it accomplished something. It didn't accomplish anything, did it?
Yeah.
What did it accomplish?
Allowed Alan to fucking electrocute himself to death.
Was that
on
the plan?
The plan I thought was he would do that and it would somehow trigger the door.
That's what I figured too. And then like, no.
No.
So he lied. He did waste rounds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was the way for Alan to kill himself.
What's even
the
logic behind it? Because, like, I don't feel like they did what? I feel like we should set up the scene for the listeners. They're trapped in this hallway. They're trapped behind a door. And they rip out the control panel because they don't have the passcode or whatever. and they're like, well, fuck, we can't get through here. So Chow Yun-Fat, he goes up to this pipe that you see leading towards the control panel, and he takes out his handcuffs, puts around the bolt, unloosens this bolt, and they start taking apart bullets and taking the gunpowder out of it. And then they, it's like 8 bullets, I would say, 7 or 8 bullets. And they put the gunpowder into this pipe, and then Chow Yun-Fat slams a bullet in there, which that's kind of cool, though, is just how, like, neatly fits in there. That was like, cool. It replaces the bolt.
It's good thing it was the same size.
Exactly. Right? How convenient. I mean, what if it wasn't? What if it was bolt. A different millimeter bullet? And then Chow Yun-Fat, he shoots the end of the bullet, and it causes the Hontar pipe to explode. And what's revealed inside this pipe is a bunch of wires. And why would it explode?
Well, because when I saw that, I thought it was like a gas line.
Yeah, and see, I thought it was oxygen.
And he was just going to explode it, and they would explode the door off or something. But
I thought it would short the wires, and the door would open. Yeah, but then it doesn't.
No, because it wouldn't explode. It would just... When you unpack gunpowder, it spreads it out. So all it does is just catch on fire.
But the bullet itself is still there. He shoots the bullet, and the bullet
Remember,
goes out.
All of his bullets explode.
Yeah.
That's right! Oh, shit. I'm sorry, guys. I forgot. I forgot all the bullets explode.
So where would you guys...
Makes sense now.
Where would you guys put this in terms of, like, overall in ranking of action movies? Would you say it's, like, one of your favorites?
I would say it's better than any superhero film that ever came out.
But, I mean, like, action movies at that time.
I think it's up there, for sure.
Because action is never like this anymore.
No.
This is such a thing wholly on its own, and I'm trying to do contemporary comparisons, because obviously it's not the same anymore, but...
Well, Olympus Down?
I'm not talking about that either. Olympus Has Fallen? Fuck that.
Fallen, whatever the fuck.
I mean, London Has Fallen, the sequel no one wanted.
Well, and I mean, that's like my opinion on it. It's like, this action film has style behind it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, during the hospital shootout scene, Alan and Mad Dog's character, they're on either side of this wall, and it's just like a series of windows. And they're running along this wall, and they're just like pulling their guns over their heads and shooting at each other through these fucking windows as they're running. Like, it's not, you know, people hiding behind corners, popping out, shooting a guy, then going back to the corner and maybe running to a different cover. Like, there's kinetic energy. There's excitement.
Everybody in this movie has a death wish.
Yeah.
Not Chow Yun-Fat.
No, but, like, they're like, I don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
The way they act, like, I don't give a fuck if I die.
Well, yeah.
I'm having a great time.
Even drag the babies into it.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about the babies before we forget about it.
I thought they were going to die, like, more than they did.
When I first saw the nursery, I'm like, is it going to be a shootout in the nursery for the newborn babies? There was one fake baby.
Oh, yeah.
They were showing... I think it was fake, but they showed all the babies. There was, like, a scene where they're all throwing them one by one in their little bassinets, and then one of them looked like a fucking Jim Henson puppet.
Yeah.
I missed that.
Rubber. It was like, maybe they were going to do a scene where a baby got shot or something, and they pulled it. They decided not to.
Well, actually, I was doing a little research on this film before we talked about it, and originally... Johnny's character was going to be a baby poisoning psychopath.
Well, that might have been what...
Okay.
But then it got changed because, like, I think the guy that was kind of, like, in the talks with Hollywood and transferring Johnny over there, he's like, no, it's not going to work. It's just not going to work for the American audience.
So it's going to go down as a legend of a baby was going to get killed in this movie. That's my feeling, because... That baby was creepy.
It was super creepy.
And then there was a hero baby that peed on
Tequila's leg. I was about to tell people this. I was like, you want to see a movie where the hero gets his leg caught on fire from an explosion and he's saved by a baby pissing on his leg and putting out the fire? This is the movie
for
you.
This is the movie.
I mean, really, it sells the movie in itself.
It's done much better than that other movie that had a baby peeing on a guy's leg.
Baby's Day Out?
I don't know. Any baby movie.
Pretty much.
I feel like
all those action baby movies.
Baby Geniuses 1 and 2.
Oh, Jesus.
Best baby movie ever.
I would say so.
If you love babies, I'd suggest Hard Boiled.
bring your kids.
Where a total of 300 people die.
307.
307?
I couldn't believe that. Like, I just saw it in the trivia earlier. Yeah, 307. That's a lot of people that die in one movie.
Yeah.
Woo!
And I think, I don't know if it told you, but it was like 80 shown deaths. I mean, there's implied deaths where you see someone explode in the background being like... But still, 80 shown deaths is pretty big. Like, these are the people that you see within the scene get riddled with bullets or exploded.
Wow.
What sucks is that I feel like it's a hard film for people to be able to find.
I think they could find it fairly. It's a fairly popular John Woo movie.
You can always order it, you know, off Amazon. Yeah. I try not to order my movies off Amazon. I felt like I was lucky to find it at Bull Moose for $5.
That's where I was going to look.
And it is definitely worth it. I mean, just seeing it in comparison to our modern action films, it's just like, how can people have not, like, taken notes from watching Hard Boiled and seeing how it works and how effective it is?
I'm sure a lot have. Like I mentioned Bad Boys earlier at Michael Bay.
Oh, I can see it.
Look at the cover here.
Oh, is that the one on the Wikipedia?
He's holding the baby.
Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
And that baby looks disgusting. Huge.
And you can actually get a used copy of Hard Boiled at Bull Moose for $2.97 right now.
Damn.
Bull Moose. I just got back from...
So I could have gotten cheaper. But this poster that we're talking about, do yourself a favor right now and search up Hard Boiled on Wikipedia and take a gander at that poster. Because it
sums up the whole movie.
It's beautiful. It's that baby just looks absolutely gorgeous on that poster. Oh my god. I mean, you guys have anything else to add to this hard-boiled discussion?
Just go watch it. If you haven't seen it, you're going to thank us later, because it's one of the best action movies ever made.
Yeah, and I would say, before going and watching this, you know, this is 1990s action film from Hong Kong. You know, it's not going to be a bunch of great jokes or, like, thoroughly engaging story, but just for the action, there's a style to it. Like, John Woo has a voice within the action. It's just not the same old action you're going to see. During the scenes, you'll be like, how many people have died so far? Because I have lost track.
If you like guns and explosions and choreographed action, you're gonna love it.
Alrighty, so I guess it is time for the next choice. For the communal film.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
And I think it's John's turn now.
It's my turn.
So what film are you going to make us watch?
I'm
going to
make you guys watch the documentary film on how we got our title for our podcast.
Oh.
And it's called... Film Fellows?
It's not Film Fellows. And I'm still hoping we're not sued. But we're going to watch Not Quite Hollywood, the untold story of... Ozploitation.
Good.
Ozploitation.
And it's about in this 70s and 80s when Australia, the government wanted to be culturally put on the map. So they started giving budgets away to people who wanted to make films. Back in the probably 60s, 70s, and 80s, I imagine, right around that time period, which birthed some of the most amazing sexual exploitation films. Horror films, action films, Mad Max came out of this.
I like all three of those things.
Some of Quentin Tarantino's favorite films. He's actually interviewed quite a bit in this documentary about how influenced he was by the films from Australia.
Nice.
And it did put Australia on the map, but not the way
that Australia wanted.
Australia wanted. So it's going to be sex and violence and horror, and it's...
Yay.
It's a celebration of all of
three of those at once.
It's cut into three categories. So there's like the sexual exploitation era, then the horror era, then the action era.
So no like pornos with guns or anything like
that? No, there is. Well, there is.
There is?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, there's still violence in some of the...
Sold.
Sweet.
I love two types of guns unloading.
At the same time.
So I thought it would be fun to watch that since it'll be actual a documentary about filmmaking rather than an actual film. But
yeah.
Sounds good.
But I... Like these two, Jamie and August, I really want to expose them to some of the films that I loved growing up and watching, and there were so many that came from Australia.
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to watch it because I've been really curious about different genres of film. Like, that's one of the fun things about learning and seeing different films, is just seeing where they came from.
Exactly.
So, thank you guys for listening. Tune in for Thursday when we will discuss our topics revolving around film. Have a great time and see you later.
Bye.
I love you.
He doesn't.
He doesn't.
I only say that to make me feel better.
And to get more views.
That's true.